Hello, everyone. Dave Levinsky here from Growth Inc., and I'm really excited today to be able to interview Aiden Elbaz. Aiden has a very impressive entrepreneurial track record. He co-founded Applied Semantics, which became Google AdSense. The company attracted venture capital and was acquired by Google in 2003. Aiden wrote the initial business plan, raised the initial money, and managed the business development for the company. So naturally, based on this background, I thought Aiden would be a great person to interview about raising capital, growing your business, and selling your business. So I'm really excited to speak with him today. Aiden, thanks again for taking the time to speak with me.
Oh, my pleasure.
Excellent. So, Aiden, let's start at the beginning, you know, the very beginning. What was your first entrepreneurial venture?
Thinking back, the first thing I ever did to go and make money was sell Blow Pops in sixth grade.
Oh, yeah?
I think I used to fill up my bag with, like, a box of 48 Blow Pops and bring them to school every day and sell them for a quarter. And it was an incredible learning experience, I think, mostly about the laws of supply and demand. I remember that if you'd want to, they'd only give you about three or four of the sour apple Blow Pops, and I was able to sell those for 50 cents. Somehow everybody thought they wanted those.
Oh, you got the premium for those?
Yeah, you get to sell those for 50 cents. I remember at one point I even had like a little mini distributor. Guy would always be buying them for me for 25 cents and then selling to other kids for 50 cents. So, you know, kind of made a business out of it until after about 3 or 4 weeks in, the school shut me down. They said you can't sell candy on campus property. So my first business was shut down. But I remember that I made about $110 in 3 weeks, and I was pretty excited about it.
That's real money back then.
It was definitely real money. I remember dancing around the house showing my family how I was able to go and make money at school, and everybody's impressed that I'd sold something like whatever it was. It was like, several hundred Blow Pops.
That's awesome. Well, good for you. It's a great, I've heard a lot of, I usually ask that question, I get a lot of interesting type businesses, and that one's definitely ranks up there, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe you could fast forward a little bit to Applied Semantics. First of all, what was the original name for Applied Semantics again?
We originally called it Oingo.
Quingo.
Oingo, O-I-N-G-O, yeah,
oh,
like the band.
Sorry, got it. And then, so what? Can you talk to us about the process of starting the company and raising capital?
So, let's see. We really bounced around a couple different ideas. Gil and Adam, two of the co-founders of the company, came together with this idea of building what was very similar to what people now call DMOS, or the Open Index, kind of like the open source Yahoo directory. And we really liked that idea for a few months, and we started, you know, trying to build this directory together by hand, and recruited some family members to help us, and I want to say, you know, the internet was kind of starting to, the stock market was starting to go crazy right around 1998, and people were raising money pretty crazy into 99. We raised the initial funding from a group, my previous job was with Advanced Micro Devices. I was selling microprocessors, and personal computer customers invested $500,000 into us, towards the end of 1999.
And how did that happen? Is this somebody that you developed a relationship with, or were they investing in you and the idea and technology? What was that? How did that work?
It's interesting. You really never know where funding is going to come from. And that's why it's good to kind of talk to everybody. We'd been talking to a variety of investors. My job during the day was to go and sell microprocessors, and this guy I was talking to, Rex Wong, his company, it was going to be doing this. They wanted to build some kind of like e-machines competitor, low-priced PCs that they were going to sell on the internet. And so he'd been talking about the fact that they raised a good amount of money for it, and I was going to try to sell microprocessors to him on this stuff. And he had mentioned raising, you know, kind of maybe a couple million dollars from some of his backers on it. And I said, you know, I'm really curious. Maybe you want to take a look at our idea. I made a point to say, can I come back after work hours? This is not related to my job. He said, sure, and I brought Gil, my brother and co-founder, and showed him the idea, and he called us like 12 hours later saying they were ready to invest.
Really? So
yeah.
What was it what was it you think about the idea that, that he liked? Was sort of was, do you think he was investing mostly in the idea or mostly in the fact that he liked and trusted you?
You know, this was, it was such a crazy time back then. I mean, you had five, six different search engine companies like Excite, InfoSeek, and Yahoo, and each one of them was worth like $3 or $4 or $5 billion back then, right? By the time mid-99 rolled around. So you just said the word search engine, and you know you were worth $5 million for that. And we actually had a very cool demonstration. We had a demonstration that disambiguated the meanings of search terms. It was already, we already had a demo that was working decently. And, we didn't think that, some of the big search engines couldn't quite disambiguate. And I guess everyone figured if we had a piece of technology that none of the big search engines, worst case scenario, someone's going to acquire you for, in those prices, in those days, $50 or $100 million.
Got it. Can you define disambiguate?
So, Oingo's second idea was what we called meaning-based search. And what we would do is, when you did a search, like in a typical search engine, for an ambiguous word that had, multiple meanings, we would be able to choose the one that, would ask you to choose the one that made the most sense. So maybe you'd search for the keyword Genesis, and we'd say, do you mean the book in the Bible? Do you mean the video game, or do you mean the comic book character? And based on what you would, we would go in and only return the search results related to the specific meaning of the word.
Got it. So you were able to demonstrate that to the first angel investor, and he said, cool,
yeah.
I like it, and 12 hours later, you had your first financing check.
I mean, he basically, 12 hours later, he called me on the phone, and eight of those was sleeping. We saw him at maybe 7 p.m. at night, and he called me on the way to work tomorrow, the next day. I was still working at AMD, and, he had a term sheet, a draft term sheet, maybe a day later.
Wow. Okay, so what happened from then to the point where you raised venture capital? Did you quit your job and more and start hiring people right away?
Yeah, I ended up quitting my job. I mean, I want to say within about a week or two of that conversation with the angel investor, it looked like it was going to happen. We went through, I want to say from the time we raised angel to the time we raised our venture round was around 10 or 11 months. And they were an extremely, roller coaster of 10, 11 months.
Why is that?
In that time, all of the following happened. We won Internet World's Best of Show. We were, we were on MSNBC. We were in Time Magazine. We were in U.S. News and World Report. We got a great call from Sergey over at Google who told us he was impressed with us and that somehow is almost as important to us as the MSNBC article. We hit 20,000 unique users in a single day, 4 days after our public launch.
Wow.
We turned down venture capital offers as high as, $15 million. The stock market crashed. Alta Vista decided not to IPO wasn't able to IPO. Companies like CMGI saw their stock go from $163 to, a few dollars. We crashed a bit in April, and we raised money right before kind of the second round of crashing, which was in like August, September. So, we were able to close in August, and the market kind of took another leg down in September.
It is a crazy.
So a lot happened.
Why did you turn down venture capital the first time?
Why did we turn that? It's very, very hard to identify when you're in the middle of a bubble. As much as everybody says bubble, and things aren't sustainable, you know, you just don't believe it. And you know, we were all in our mid and older, we were all in our 20s. None of us had ever seen a bubble before. And so we just thought those times would go on forever. We thought if someone was offering us $15 million now, all we had to do was make the company a little bit bigger and they'd be offering us $30 million. I think we had some number in our head that we wanted $25 million. That was just, we saw other companies in our space, you know, raising 20 and 30. We thought we deserved $25 million. And it's funny, I remember when we'd explain what our $25 million was for, we never had good answers. We never could really explain what we needed $25 million. We just knew that everybody else had it. But I think that came down to our lack of experience at the time.
Got it. So what did you guys have any advisors, or was it a lot of, you know, smart 20-somethings that didn't really have the financial experience in raising capital?
I'd say the latter. I think we had a great team. We had a lot of smart guys, and everybody was just very, very much into it and excited by it, and we just worked very, very hard. I really don't think that we had I can't really point to anybody outside of the company who really, really... There were a couple people who nudged us. I mean, Rex Wong can be credited for bringing us out to the internet world, which was helpful. And, you know, but it's really hard to find somebody outside the company who really pointed us in the right direction.
Got it. So that when it came time to raise that venture capital round, so what was the amount of the venture capital round that you eventually did raise?
It was 5.2 million.
$5.2 million round, and then how did the
at a lesser valuation than we had a year earlier. We had an offer to raise $15 million at 30 pre,
right,
with no revenues. A year later, we had customers. We had customers who included Yahoo was a customer. We had a few registrars as customers. I want to say we were probably grossing maybe $100,000-$150,000 a year. And a year later, we did a $5.2 million round at a lesser valuation.
Wow. That's a lesson on – but as you said, you never know when you're in a bubble. You never know if the valuation is going to go up or down. The good news is that you were able to raise the money eventually, because sometimes it goes even – more stuff, and that way you fail to raise capital at all. So that is good. I'm sure you're a little frustrated at that point, though, that the valuation went down.
You know, I think we were very thankful that we had raised our round. We didn't have any more money to go on as a business. We had exhausted our angel funding. We kind of exhausted some of our personal funding and some of our some of the founders were willing to put in. And I think we had just probably a couple months left before the company would have had to either go some severe layoffs, people would have to start not taking salaries again, and I think that would have really been a death blow at the time. Seeing the market crash a month later, we really looked at each other thinking, this would not have happened. We wouldn't have closed this round 30 days later.
Wow. It's incredible how things turn out, and fortunately turned out well. Can you talk about the process of raising the venture capital? Is it something that you guys created a list of VCs and went after them, or were you on the recipient side where they reached out to you, or how'd that work?
You know, I want to say it was a lot of network word of mouth kind of thing. You know, you'd go to different shows, people would come up to you, or different VCs would introduce you to their VC friends, or you know, I want to say they really did approach us more than we approached them. For the first few months, anyway. Toward the end, we were approaching them.
And you think that? Oh, so you think a lot of it had to do with your networking, getting out there, going to the shows, and being in the right places?
We really did kind of try to spread our wings. You know, we'd go to conferences. You know, we met a lot of people at the first two Internet World shows. You know, we had some decent PR hits back then, and so. That was that really helped us kind of on an inbound list of email, you know, people contacting us once they heard about us through reading an article or reading some web article about us.
Got it. So the PR, I guess, helped in a lot of aspects from a marketing perspective, I guess, to consumers and partners and also to investors. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't want to say PR as much as just I want to say it was just the natural outgrowth of the things that that happened to us. Like, for example, winning that award. Winning that award just, I suppose that just kind of made the marketing machine go a bit. So, you know, we'd have writers contacting us to talk to us about, you know, the award and so forth.
Excellent. And so once you raised the capital, how long was it from when you raised the venture capital till when you were acquired?
Let's see. We were acquired in April 2003. We raised the round in the venture round or the angel round?
I guess both. So the angel, then nearly a year later, you had the venture round.
You know, in our mind, I really want to say everything started going. To us, the angel round really, you know, we were able to, I don't want to say it was bigger than a normal angel round. This was, the angel round ended up being over $1 million and allowed us to grow to 22 employees and make some significant hires. I think that's really when the company started taking off. I mean, five of us were working on this thing in 98, but we started hiring pretty aggressively in maybe around September, October of 99.
Okay.
So April 2003 is when we got acquired. So I want to say that made it about 3.5 years from start to finish.
Excellent. So in that 3.5 years, what were some of your goals? Were you thinking, because you mentioned earlier that you were, you know, in the search engine space, you have these companies that originally have these, you know, billion-dollar market caps. Was your end game always to be acquired? Was that your vision, or, you know, thinking about going public? You know, what were your thoughts on your exit strategy at that point?
So this is targeted for entrepreneurs listening to this. I'd say that I think everybody had different ideas in their mind. You know, you have a few founding members, and I think everybody's got a little bit of a different vision of what they want to go and do and be. I think, you know, I think a strong financial exit was important. Everybody did want to make money. There's also, you know, Adam, co-founder Adam, who definitely was very focused on, both Gil and Adam were very focused on the vision of what you can do with meaning-based search. I want to say they had a little bit of a longer focus on it. Guys like me and Jason were the salespeople and the marketing people, and we were so focused on quarterly sales, and so we, by nature, we were more focused on, you know, quick big exit. How do you do it?
Right.
But I would say this in terms of advice for entrepreneurs. I think you cannot go into a business thinking about your exit. I really think it's a bad idea for a few different reasons. Number one, your business model is going to change probably 4 or 5 times in the first year alone. So if you don't know where you're going, how could you possibly know who needs you? Number two, you have, especially in a changing economy like this one, you don't even know which companies are going to exist, you know, 4 years from now. So, you know, thinking to yourself, remember, at one point we got an offer to get acquired by Alta Vista.
Okay.
They, you know, kind of, I don't want to say died on the vine. I mean, they eventually did get acquired themselves, but it was pretty, you know, people were talking about a $5 billion IPO, and they ended up selling out for $100-something million to Overture.
Right.
So they themselves found it. You know, the people who you think are going to acquire you may not be around. And lastly, if you're focused on the exit, then the only way to make the company big and to have that vision is to be focused on never needing anybody but yourselves, because your business is so good that you're wildly profitable and you don't need anybody else. I think that's the way to think about it.
Agreed. That's a good point. It's a good way to grow your business and think about, I guess, think about growing value and growing a great company rather than just your exit.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about the process of when you did exit and, you know, selling your company to Google? What was the process like and how long did it take?
The guys at Google are and remain extremely sharp, and they were much, much quicker about process and diligence than any other. You know, we'd gone down the path with four separate companies being acquired prior to Google. This was our, I want to say it was our fifth, maybe even sixth, I may be forgetting one. And you know, some companies are pretty slow, think about it, diligence. Google was extremely fast. They knew what they wanted before we even met them the first time and saw that we fit very well into where they were going. It was, I want to say from the first meeting we had with them was probably in early, mid-February, maybe, and the acquisition was complete April 23rd. They got through everything. I mean, term sheet, negotiation, agreement, contract, finalization, and even an announcement on the deal in just over 2 months, which is shockingly fast.
That is shockingly fast. Can you talk about, most people listening to this call have never been acquired, they've never sold a company. So you mentioned the term sheet, negotiations, agreement, and the contract getting it out there. What can you talk through that a little bit about what things did you learn during that process? What things that other entrepreneurs should be aware of when going through that process?
So when we were getting acquired, there was a little bit of, you're not sure whether or not this acquiring company is actually going to acquire you. You don't know if the deal is going to fall through. Had so many deals fall through, and you don't know if potentially sometimes you're worried that they're taking a look at you just to find out about your company so they can replicate it. I remember that we were prepared in case this happened because we'd gone through this before, and so some of us were very focused on continuing the existing business, pretending nothing's going to happen, listening and finding out what's going to happen. So as far as the actual negotiations, there were Gil and Jason were the two guys focused on that, and so I was aware every step of the way, but I wasn't the guy actually sending that term sheet back and forth.
Got it. And what were the key negotiating issues? Is price the key issue?
We initially had been talking about maybe doing some sort of an earn-out, and yeah, I mean, you're trying to figure out, when you're being acquired by a private company, there's the issue of trying to value stock. Price is important. What's going to happen with your employees? Will the employees which employees get to stay on, which employees do not get to stay on? Will everybody get fully vested on their options, or do they have to wait around to vest? So there's vesting schedules, new employee contracts, you've got you're trying to figure out what, if there's potentially option packages for going forward, how long those option packages are. You've got your conflict waiver, how long you're going to stay out of the space for. That term is failing me right now.
Non-compete.
Yeah.
Okay, and then did you and your co-founders stay on with Google for some period of time?
I stayed on for a little over 4 years, and Jason stayed for about four, and Brad, I think, might still be there, and leaving early, Adam and Ari, a couple of the early guys, were there for just a few, probably less than a year, and Gil probably was there for 3 years. So, we ranged between a year and 4 years, depending on who.
Got it. And did you guys actually move up there, or did you guys continue your location where it was?
We all stayed down here, except for Brad, moved up north.
Got it. And what role did your investors, both your angel investors and your venture capital investors, play in the process of preparing the company for the sale and negotiations and the whole process?
I'd say none.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you have a board meeting that they had a vote on anything, or really was there just no interaction.
Yeah, I mean, we did have to bring it to the board, and they we did have to bring it to the board. That's about as deeply as they got involved.
Got it. And what pitfalls would you warn entrepreneurs against in the process? You know, what are some of the pitfalls that you've learned from, you know, the period of 98 to 03 and, you know, starting the company, raising angel capital, raising venture capital, growing the company and selling the company? What are some things that you learned that you would advise entrepreneurs to heed the advice and the learning?
Do what you know. I'd say do what you know. Well, at the same point, we didn't really end up doing what we knew. But I'd say, I mean, it's really nice if you have some bit of background in your space. I suppose you can go and adapt. Maybe that's more of an investment advice. Invest in what you know.
Right.
Okay, let me think about this. I would say,
like mistakes that you may have made that you wouldn't replicate.
Okay, here's the advice I would give. I would say that you should. There's going to be this kind of desire for you to think about changing your business model early, and I think you should accept that desire. Accept the fact that what you probably told an investor or you told somebody last week or last month isn't what you want to be anymore, isn't what you want to do anymore. You want to do something different. And I think if you feel strongly that new business model is where you should be going, then you should accept that kind of desire the feeling that you should go and move your business model. At the same time, you should resist the urge to focus on anything than what you think is your, what you believe is the core business model at that moment. And so that might sound like conflicting advice, but if you listen to what I'm saying, I really don't think it is conflicting. I'm saying for one single month, you might think this is the right thing to do, and for that month, you do everything you can to hash it out until you feel it's not the right idea. And, you know, this is true of even a lot of big companies. I mean, you look at where IBM makes money today and where Microsoft makes money today, and companies change, and companies, even once you're public, companies change. You know, you always have to be thinking about the next thing. So focus on what you believe is the right thing, but don't resist the urge to move if you think if you've changed your givens and your assumptions about the market that you're playing in.
I think it's a great point. I mean, you guys obviously lived that point, and you changed your business, as you mentioned, some iterations. There's a lot of, you know, examples like Adobe Corporation, which started out as a company that created fonts, and they, you know, look at what they are right now today. They completely changed their business, and as you mentioned, you know, I'm sorry?
They created funds?
Fonts. Like different
types. Oh, fonts.
Different,
fonts.
Different types,
gotcha,
of fonts. So they were
okay.
A font company. And so there's countless examples of companies that started in one area and then moved. And I like, you know, the key question becomes, you know, when can you decide, you know, how do you make that decision whether to shift gears? And I think what you're saying is really taking a month, and correct me if I'm wrong, taking a month to really focus on the current business and figure out, can it work or do you need to shift? Is that your sort of methodology for figuring out when it's time to change?
I think there's a lot of variables that go into this. I mean, you're constantly talking to potential partners, potential customers, end users, and you're using as many data points as you can to try to figure out, is this going to work? That what we think is going to work right now, is that going to work?
And I guess if it's not going to work, you have to move on and adopt.
Yeah, or the thing you chose might not just may not be a big enough market. It just may be a small idea, and it's good enough to keep doing, but you better think of some other things to add into it. And I think that was true of our first revenue-generating product, which was DomainSense. That was a product that would come up with conceptually relevant domain names when the one you were looking for wasn't available. And, you know, this is a product that we owned the market. I mean, We had deals with Network Solutions, Register.com, Enom, Dotster, Yahoo, Bulk Register. Everybody in the space used us. And yet, okay, the entire market, everything we were doing, it was maybe $1 million a year of revenue. So, you know, that was never going to sustain our company. I mean, it was worth supporting and continuing to support, but it wasn't going to, doesn't make you an acquisition candidate.
Got it. Agree. It's a good point. In addition to, you know, running businesses and you exited the business, and now do you get approached to invest as an angel in other companies? Have you done that?
I do. I do angel investing. I like angel investing. And so, yeah, I look at businesses and invest in businesses now. I'd say I'm most focused on my own startup right now that I probably have, you know, done the most angel investing into my own business.
Got it. Can you talk about your own startup, or is that under wraps at this point?
No, it's public. It's called Deep Dive Media. We're focused mostly on health content sites. So we've got about 15 health sites now. Our big focus, we just acquired the domain name supportgroups.com, and we intend to be the center of online support groups.
And is this a business that you're going to eventually, you know, plan on raising more capital for as well?
I think that is something you think about as you go on. At, you know, the economy right now and the prospects of fundraising, you're not going to be looking to get any good valuations today. I think if you're going to raise money, you should do it in times when cash is flowing freely, and times like this, you should think about running off your own money for the time being. So the focus is to get to profitability, grow the company, and if capital starts flowing freely again, then maybe it'll be time to evaluate that.
Got it. And can you talk a little bit about your mindset or your thought processes for starting this business? What was it about this type of business that attracted you? And so as an experienced and successful entrepreneur, already having one, you know, very, very big success story and exit, you know, what were the characteristics of a business that you, I guess, look for as an angel investor and obviously as an angel investor in your own business?
You know what? It's pretty clearly twofold. First of all, what I referred before, do what you know. In many ways, building up sites, you know, you need good domain names to start with. This was kind of a parallel for me. I'd focused on domain names, domain park, AdSense for domains for so long, being at Google's head of domain channel, that, you know, I'd acquired a few good domain names and believed that, you know, everyone acquiring, there's this entire massive business on in domain names, but the real market is the content. Eventually, you have to build properties on top of all these undeveloped lots. And it was just a matter of time before people would start doing them. I think the park page business was, people are getting accustomed to these park pages, and they know they're not real sites, and you need to put some real sites up. So that was the plan, put up some real sites. The second thing is that I am investing in a person. The guy who's running the company is a very long-term, good close friend of mine. And he was committed to the business. He came from the healthcare space, specifically the addiction space. And so we've got a bunch of addiction names. And, you know, he's the right caliber of a person he's somebody who's been successful in his job, but has never done a startup before. And so there's a motivation from a financial perspective to go and have a success. He cares about the space, and he's very dedicated, motivated. So right space, right person.
Excellent. That makes a lot of sense. Are there any other advice that you have for entrepreneurs seeking to, you know, start a business, grow a business, sell a business, or raise capital, really everything that you've gone through? Any other advice that you have?
I think you need to do more than you talk. You got to get a demo up. Get something. Anybody can get a demo up pretty cheaply. There are many ways, and you don't need to raise money to get some sort of a demonstration of what you're working on. You know, keep your business plan short. 3-page executive summary, 15-page PowerPoint. Anything more, it just looks like you're a guy who writes a business plan and doesn't, the irony of this is that I think I wrote a 40-page business plan for Oingo, which didn't raise us any money. I mean, when we went around the second go around in August 2000, it was the revised 3-page executive summary, and a business that we'd started building that people responded to as we kind of went back out. So try to get a demo working. See if you can validate. See if you can validate just even a little bit of customer interest. It's one thing to say, I believe the market for X and Y is going to be $100 million and there's 400 interested customers. Well, see if you can just find two people just to take it for free and even show even a bit of interest in it. It goes a long way to have an actual customer say they're interested. When we raised actual venture capital, there's a guy, Mark Wozniak over at Alta Vista, who took a call for us and, told our VC, hey, we're interested in this stuff. And that's very helpful. It's helpful to have a customer say, we need what these guys have.
That's a great point. I guess that validates you to the investor, that validates yourself to yourself, that you know that you have a business there, that if there are customers willing to buy your products, particularly after you show them a demo, it's worth it to sort of, build it out and build a company out of it. One last question I have is that you sort of started the company, interestingly, as sort of a seems like more of a project, because you were still at your current jobs. What was your initial mindset? Did you have any initial hurdles to, was it raising that capital? Would you have, if you didn't get that first angel, would you have kept looking for more angels? Or you think, how would the company possibly have grown?
Yeah, that's what the turning point was for me. And I think that was a turning point. I didn't really have any money saved up. I was 25 years old. I'd actually just gotten a raise at my job at AMD. And when I told them I was leaving, they even told me, you could get another raise in 6 months. And so it was just, it was just eating. I didn't have any savings. So when we raised the money from the angel, we could at least pay ourselves, I think we paid ourselves, what ended up being about 60% less than I was making at the time. So it was literally just enough to pay rent, buy a couple of drinks on the weekend and eat.
That's all you need to do.
Yeah.
Excellent. And my final question is any other questions that I forgot to ask you that you think could help entrepreneurs and business owners that are listening?
Let's take a look. Well, I'll get to that, but before that, I will make one promotional shout-out, and that is I've got two ideas that I think are both viable, could make money, that I'm personally willing to invest in, and I'm looking for the right entrepreneur to fill those roles. So if there's anyone out there who wants to take a chance to probably make a lot money, less money than they're making at their job, but to own some equity in a good idea that I would fund, I'm interested. Finding the right entrepreneur can be difficult.
Okay, but, can we tell them where should they go? How do they contact you?
Well, let's see. They should be able to find me on the web. If they can't, they're probably not the right guy.
Okay.
Eitan Elbaz. You can find me on. You can find me on Facebook or various other ways. You can find me through Facebook.
Very good.
Let's see. Spelling of my name is Eitan Elbaz. Let's see. Do I have any other? Too busy. Take a look at some notes here. I don't know. I'd say if you're going into this, certainly during the bubble times, people are thinking, I have to do this for a year until I come out. I think you need to put in your mind, if you're really going to do this, I know a number of entrepreneurs, a number of guys who sold companies, and nobody does this in a year. Nobody. It takes 3, 4, 5, 6 years to get this done. And if you're not willing to put in 3, 4, 5, 6 years to get it done, then you may not be the entrepreneur or founder of a company who's going to have the resistance, the resilience to go through what will probably be a difficult adoption period, trying to get people to use your product, probably some ups and downs with employees that you hire, maybe you go through some management you didn't like, maybe you go through some tough economic period. One way or another, the $1,500 million acquisitions that you read about, none of these happen in a year, and I want to say none of them really happen in 2 years. Every now and then, you'll see a Twitter. Twitter just happened to be a simple idea that just went extremely viral, and so probably wasn't quite the hurdle of building building a Google, but I think for every Twitter out there, I think it's 100 Googles that took several years to build.
I think it's a great point.
Kevin, if you're listening to this, no offense, I think it's an incredibly good product.
I'm sorry. The Twitter?
That was my call out to Evan Williams, in case he heard me say that Twitter was an easy idea.
Twitter's done as a nice success story in itself, or whatever. People have positive and negative feelings about it. They've obviously, the fact that their growth curve has really speaks for itself, so it's pretty impressive. But what you're saying, that you really have to have that mindset that a company is going to take 3 to 6 years. And on average, I think it's 7 or more for most companies to achieve success. And you got to go in there with that mindset that I'm going to work hard, not just for a year, but for many years to make it happen. That's a great point.
I think that's exactly right. I think you need to go into it thinking that this is, and it's got to be your main focus in life. And surround yourself with smart people. That's the other thing. Just like-minded smart people. If you surround yourself with the wrong people, they can take you down the wrong path. They can waste money. They can get too entrenched with internal politics. You have no time to fight within the company, and you have you can't deliberate direction strategy forever. You need to execute. It's okay to have different opinions, but I think sharp folks who are like-minded can see through that stuff and come to agreement.
Excellent. Aiton, this was extremely helpful. I think that everyone who listens to this is going to get a ton of value from it. I really appreciate your time, and thanks again for being with us today.
Sure thing, Dave.